What's going on, fellow nature lovers, and welcome back to yet another episode of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast, where if you have listened to our podcast before, you already know that we enjoy discussing nature, sometimes about animals, sometimes we discuss plants, and sometimes we talk about concepts about nature, or even what's found out there in our beautiful world. Hey folks, this is Tommy, and I am your audio digital host of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast. Folks, we are now into season number 3 of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast. So glad you're with us today. Hey folks, today is episode number 45, and on today's episode, I would like to discuss the beautiful but sometimes odoriferous black and white short-legged Pepe Le Pew, otherwise known as the striped skunk. Hey folks, you know I love that Warner Brothers character we all know as Pepe Le Pew. That was one of my favorite cartoons. But I also love the real cuddly looking striped skunk, although I am very cautious of getting just too close to one in the wild to actually do any actually cuddling. Folks, I'll talk about a real couple of close encounters I've had before, and I've had a lot of them, but I've had a couple that were really, really close, and you won't believe how close when we get to that segment. All right, folks, we're back, and just want to tell you a little bit. Our podcast, the Amateur Naturalist Podcast, folks, it's now listened to worldwide in all 50 United States states, in 107 countries, and in an amazing, blows my mind, 2,357 cities around the world. Hey, for some reason, I've just never been able to get past that 107 countries for 5 months straight now. So folks, I just wanted to say thank you to our brand new listeners in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, welcome to the show. Kansas City, Kansas, Kalamazoo, Michigan, and right pretty close by to here in Houstonville, Kentucky, where we just picked up some new listeners yesterday. Hey, thank you folks for our wonderful listeners. And now on to this week's episode. Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to episode number 45 of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast, where you know what we do. We delve into the fascinating world of wildlife and natural ecosystems with each and every episode. Podcast episode. Hey folks, I am your audio digital host today, and we are going to discuss the gorgeous, cute little black and white striped skunk. Now, I know they're cute, but you got to be a little careful, right? This little fur ball of a mammal lives all across North America, from southern Canada, believe it or not, all across the United States, and down through northern Mexico. And I even read where they're down into South America as well. And we'll talk about that a little bit here in a little bit. Mainly today, we're just going to talk about the striped skunk, but we're going to find out there's several other skunks, including the spotted skunk. And of course, this mammal is not new to anyone listening today, so you've seen them, and you've really seen them a lot lately, I guarantee you, and we're going to talk about that as well. But hold on just a minute, folks. Put the brakes on. Hold on. Whoa, slow down the horses. You know, if you're a regular listener to this podcast, you know that I am always talking about animals or plants or even mushrooms or maybe even skunks today. And I always like to first discuss that particular species, a little bit of a drum roll, right? Their biological classification, or what we commonly call its taxonomy. So the striped skunk is in the kingdom Animalia, and it's in the phylum Chordata. It's in the class Mammalia. It's in the order Carnivora. It's in the family Mephitidae. It's in the genus Mephitis or Mephitis. And it's in the species, pretty simple here, folks, Mephitis Mephitis. Just use the word twice. It's the genus name and the species. The genus is Mephitis, and the species name is also Mephitis. This cute and cuddly, cute little mammal is pretty small in size, about the size of a house cat, you know, maybe a larger house cat, sometimes just a small house cat, somewhere probably between about 2 pounds, pretty little, up to about a dozen or so pounds. So I have a house cat at home that's a little bit bigger than that, and I have another one that's about 10 or 11 pounds. So about the size of my smaller house cat. Now, if you remember that old Warner Brothers cartoon, Pepe Le Pew, remember that one, folks? And if you're old like me, you remember that. If you're young like my kids, you probably don't remember Pepe Le Pew. But old Pepe was always trying to chase down this cute, cute little black little female cat. I think she was French, remember? Or I think she was English and he was French. Do I have that right? I think that's the way it was. In the cartoon, they were about the same exact size. Remember that? And he was a little confused because his hormones were kind of rushing around, right? And that's about right in most cases as far as size goes between those two animals, a house cat and a skunk. Now, old Pepe, he was charged up on a large overdose of male hormones as he chased that black little cute house cat all over the town, trying to romance her. You guys can feel me on that, right? And I know that we have an adorable gray house cat back at the house that might be 1.5 times larger than a skunk. That's one of the house cats that we have, female. She's pretty good size. But on average, house cats are pretty close to the same size as these skunks. Now, that skunk family, Mephitidae, consists of 13 species of skunks. Almost all of those species are restricted to southern Canada, down through Mexico, and some are even down to South America. Skunks are known for their skill to squirt a very strong-smelling liquid to ward off their predators. We're all familiar with that, right? Hopefully you've never been sprayed. I've had a dog that kind of rolled its side of its head in a dead one time and about never seemed to get that out of the side of its head, you know, around its ear area. And I will tell you a story or a couple of stories where I was really, really close to skunks, and I'm lucky, very lucky I didn't get sprayed. So in Kentucky, we have the striped skunk, what we're going to talk about today, and we also have one that's a little smaller. It's called the spotted skunk, and they're quite a bit smaller. Striped skunks obviously have those one or two stripes down right down the middle of their back. We call that the dorsal area. Spotted skunks, they almost always have a couple of, or one spot behind each ear, but then they have a just all kinds of different spots across their body. Now, the striped skunk does not have to have those perfect stripes down the middle, but most of the time that's what you see. In Kentucky, we have them both, the striped skunk and the spotted skunk. But mainly around here in Kentucky and a lot of states in the United States, we mainly see the striped skunk, especially where I live. Now, although skunks are sometimes seen as annoyance, and I'd say most of you guys probably see them as an annoyance, and you will all agree they're really, really cute. Really cute little animals. A lot of folks, or not a lot of folks, but several years ago, folks would get them, acquire them from some pet stores or some private pet store owners that would sell them de-scented or where the glands were taken out. Cute little animal. But, I always thought, man, I'd love to have one as a pet, but probably not one of the best things you can do. So people have had them as pets as well. Now, farmers kind of see them sometimes as an annoyance, you know, and a lot of landowners and gardeners, because they are... They can be really good, and then sometimes they can be really bad. Let's talk about the good. Skunks are, like I said, sometimes seen as an annoyance, but they're actually favorable to landowners and gardeners and even farmers, because they partake on a good-sized number of agricultural and garden pests, such as grubs in our yards. So you know how we're always fighting to get rid of grubs, and what do? We go up to one of these big box stores and we buy some herbicides, some pesticides, some different things like that, chemicals, and we bring those chemicals back and we spray our yards with it. And we do a lot of things like that to kill the pest and the grubs and things like that, because we want this beautiful, perfect-looking lawn. And the perfect-looking lawn is not, as we're starting to hear a lot more about these days, is not the most perfect yard. It hurts our bee populations. It hurts all of our, you know, insect populations, and we need those, right? And I'm not going to talk about that today, but that sounds like a great topic to talk about in the future. But when we're spraying those herbicides and those pesticides, and we are killing all kinds of animals, we're even killing, poison mice, we're killing some of the owls that come down and grab a mouse or something. But we'll talk about that. Just remember, do you want to kill the grubs? If you kill the grubs, you might not have skunks around, and you won't have skunks digging around in your yards. But what's the best thing? Just think about it. Think about nature. So right now, folks, it's the month of February 2024. And if you do any driving at all, and of course you all probably drive, I know that you see, or you are seeing, quite a few dead skunks on the roads and the highways around our cities and out there in the countryside. Any highway, tomorrow morning I'll be driving to Louisville from Lexington, and I will guarantee you I see quite a few skunks on the road. It's that time of year. If you don't see them, I know that you are definitely smelling them as you drive by these poor little guys out there who were unfortunate victims out there on the highways and the roads. Cars and skunks obviously just don't match up very well. In February and in March, our male skunk populations, they're going through reproduction, right? And it's all over his mind, reproduction. And with a combination of not seeing very well, those male skunks are just walking around. They tend to just walk right out in front of moving cars. And usually, out of fear, they will spray the car right before getting hit. Or what typically happens is, obviously, they get hit by the car and their musk glands are then broken open. And the result is, unfortunately, a dead skunk. And then we, as we drive by, smell that really pungent odor of their defense mechanism. And it's busted, and it's all over that car and all over the road, and we smell it quite a bit, right? Pretty unfortunate for the skunk, and I've grown to get a little sad when I smell that smell, because it's not just a smell. It means an animal has died right there. So it's pretty sad this time of the year, as you see countless skunks dead on our highways in February and March, and even sometimes in early April. If you didn't know, and if you didn't just pick up, it coincides with the skunk mating season. Now, skunks are wandering about quite a bit right now in the months of February and March due to the actual mating season, and they're doing much of their traveling at night. Now, what color are they, right? Think about it. They're black. They got a little bit of white on them. Sometimes they're almost solid black. I've seen some solid black skunks before. And a very large majority of these male skunks are then run over by cars during the night and in the very early morning hours. So that's why tomorrow morning at about 7, as I make my way to Louisville, I'm going to see a few that were killed tonight. It's sad, right? So skunks are known for not being really very super wary. I've seen them. They've walked right by me before, not even know I'm standing there. They're also, they have really weak eyesight. So in my time spent in the outdoors, been in the outdoors a lot, and I've seen many skunks in the very early or the very late hours that were moving about. I got to tell you a quick story. One time I was coming up out of a creek, and I went up the hill just a little bit, up this little hill, this embankment, and there was some grass out in this wide open field. It wasn't agricultural crop, just some tall grass. And in that tall grass, I saw some little black things moving around. And at first I saw groups of these black things, and we had known that on that land at the time there were some wild boars, and that field had been notorious for having wild boars just tearing up the land. And as I came up over that and saw just down in the grass these black things moving about, I never dreamed that those were that many skunks. I thought it was like piglets from the wild boars. So I was actually stalking in really, really, really close. We won't go into all of that. But I was crawling in, and right at the last moment, as I rose up, I was face to face with like three skunks, and there were quite a few around me, but it was pretty amazing. And I could go all day talking about stories like that. But I've also seen them in the daytime as well, coming up out of den holes. And I actually could smell this skunk. Like I wasn't smelling anything. And then all of a sudden I was picking up this skunk smell, and then up and out of this groundhog hole comes a skunk, right? So coming up out of the den hole. I've also been walking along the edges of fields and woods, and walked right up on adult skunks as they were like traveling right in front of me. So they've probably been out there eating all night out in the fields, looking for grubs and looking for fruit and blackberries and different things to eat. And then they're heading back to their woods or the edges of the woods to go to a den. And they just walked right dead in front of me and didn't even notice me. So I just stopped and froze, and seen a lot of that before. Had them come right by me in the woods before. Sometimes, like I didn't get too worried, but I always perked up a little bit and made sure I walked out of there backwards just a little bit. What else? I've never been sprayed by a skunk. And I know several years ago, where I live now, our next door neighbor let their dog out, and their dog ran down into the backyard and sure enough ran right into a skunk chasing a skunk. So we think about that every time we open our back door and let our two little dogs out, because there's some woods behind our house, and we'll occasionally, you know, you go out in the backyard and you'll smell a skunk, and it hasn't been hit. It's just the smell's back there. It's has sprayed a house cat or a fox or a coyote or something. So been very, very close to striped skunks before. I'll tell you a little bit more right here. So somewhere around, I'm going by memory, but I know it was about 40 plus years ago, I was solo winter camping up in the Great Smoky Mountains. So I'm at pretty high altitude. I'm up there. I'm not on the top of a peak or anything, but I'm up in the mountains and I'm camping. And I mean, it is cold, cold, cold. 10 degree cold. Wind just a howling. We'll talk about it. At that time in my life, I had very, very cheap tent. I had two sleeping bags that were just the kind you'd buy for a sleepover, right? I mean, we'd had them since I was a little kid. So just cheap sleeping bags, cheap tent, nothing to lay on, no pad at all. This is a setup for like nice, warm summer sleeping or summer camping, right? But on this particular trip, it was a 10 degree Fahrenheit night. And I was sleeping on the ground, no sleeping pad, like I said. And I said, okay, I'm going to take one of these sleeping bags and stuff it into the other sleeping bag. And then I had a regular toboggan and a wool toboggan, and I put both of them on, right? And then I put a couple, two or three thick sweatshirts on and a wool sweater over top of that. And I had a couple of pairs of pants, like I think some jogging pants and then some wool pants. Had a couple of pairs of wool socks. So you got it, right? It's cold out there. And I can remember going to bed that night, and it was really, really cold. And the mountain wind that night was howling. And it had started snowing right as I was, you know, had put my fire out. And huge snowflakes were blowing real hard. And then, as I laid down, I was like, man, this is the dumbest thing I've ever done. I'm not even going to wake up. You know, I'm going to die tonight. And I'm laying there, and I probably laid there for 30 minutes, shaking uncontrollably, shivering and shaking, just out of control. And I was doubting, you know, if I should even be camping at all in that kind of weather with such terrible camping gear, when all of a sudden, I eventually, finally fell asleep. So, pretty good, you know, hey, all right, I made it. So luckily, I woke up the next day. But man, oh man, I can remember the next morning, I woke up in my little small three-person tent. I looked at my thermometer. I knew it was going to be cold, so I brought a thermometer, and it was a very low 8 degree Fahrenheit. Folks, I don't know what the wind chill was. There's no telling what the wind chill was that morning. I just couldn't bring it to myself to unzip that tent zipper and go outside until I warmed up just a bit. I'm telling you, the wind was howling out there. In order to warm up, you know, what I did is I kind of thought to myself, and I had a little tiny, one of those little tiny camping backpack stoves, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to cook a little bacon for my early mountain breakfast, and I started a small little camp stove. I know this isn't good, so bear with me, inside of the tent. Now, I'm going to tell you, I was really careful of ventilation So I open the two zippers of the tent and kind of open this little flap up at the top to get a little airflow. But I was just too cold to go outside yet. So there I was inside my tent. I cooked some bacon, and I know that awesome bacon smell began to float around my tent. And now I know it's floating outside of the tent all throughout the woods. Well, in a few short moments, I found out some other animal liked that bacon smell just as much as I did. Now, on the opposite side of my tent, let's call that the back side of my tent, all the way on the back side away from the door, all of a sudden this little animal started clawing at the tent wall. You know, kind of like a cat does, clawing on your couch. Well, this animal is clawing at the back wall of my tent. And, you know, I didn't think about it. I never dreamed what this animal might be. And so, I wasn't too worried, since it appeared to be kind of small in size anyway, right? Well, as I sat there, I watched the outline of the animal's body go across the back, go down the side of the tent until it finally turned the corner and came to the slightly unzipped door. I knew it was there, right? And I'm sure that smell's coming out that little unzipped portion. I'd guess I had it unzipped maybe 8 inches, something like that. All of a sudden, I got like the surprise of my life as this cute little head of a striped skunk came in through the door of my tent. Folks, it was unbelievable. I can still remember his nose moving as he was smelling the inside of my tent within 2 feet of where I was actually sitting. I'm a pretty short person, so my arm is reach out to that zipper. I mean, he's within 2 feet of where I'm sitting. Without even thinking too much, as quick as possible, I quickly tapped the tent over top of his head and I quickly zipped down on that zipper. I was expecting to get sprayed. Now, the skunk, he jerked his head back, luckily, and I've always thought one of two things could have happened right then and there. Right then and there. Now, he could have gotten scared and ran into my tent, which would have placed him pretty much right there in my lap, or he could have jumped back as I zipped down the zipper. So, I was blessed. I froze at this point, waiting for that spray to come towards my tent door. Now, what I thought was going to happen was a disaster. It never happened. I guess that up there in the Smoky Mountains, around those campground areas, the skunks see enough tourists or enough campers to not be scared enough to spray them at close quarters. And I was the only person in that entire area just because the weather was so bad that day. About 2 days later, some folks started showing up. Now, I will go on to say that as the week warmed up in the mountains that week, I drove by a picnic area just to tell you how maybe tame they are. And I saw a man and a woman about the same age, probably married, and they were actually sitting at a picnic table feeding a couple of hot dogs to a cute little striped skunk. I remember looking, and they are both got a hot dog in their hand, reaching under the table. The skunk is standing up, eating the hot dog out of their hand. A little dangerous, right? They got some pretty dang sharp teeth. So maybe they are pretty used to people in the national parks. But let's move on, right? Please don't forget, now this is a good point for me to put a little advisory. Don't forget that you should never, ever, ever feed the wild animals, because what it does is it causes them to lose their natural fear of humans and they get too close, as that skunk did. I wasn't trying to draw in the skunk, but I'm sure the bacon smells and the hamburger smells and steak smells and all the smells that they get on a daily basis during the camping season probably brings them right in, and people toss them hot dogs and things to keep them away. But you can see what it causes. So folks, you know, most all of the long year, skunks are actually kind of pretty solitary animals. Yeah, you're going to see some moms. I'm sure you've seen the videos. But if you haven't seen them in the wild, those moms walking along, leading a little small group of adorable baby skunks. But most of the time, what you see is not skunks in groups, right? Then it comes to February and to March and early April, and all those hormones get wound up, and the skunk mating season arrives. And as those hormones build up, those desires of the males start staying on the to stay on the move constantly in search for receptive females. It really starts to ramp up this month right now in February. And the males really start to increase their range, and they move all night long and parts of the day when you don't usually see them. And they're just looking for those receptive males to mate with. And they'll mate with more than one, right? I mean, if you didn't know that, they do. And if the skunks can get across the highway and not get killed by one of our cars, they're going to eventually find a female and mate and have some little babies. And these female skunks usually have one litter each year. Now, these male skunks, they don't stop mating. Just because they made a female pregnant, they don't stop. They keep on mating, right? So, oh no, they just keep traveling the roads and the fields and the backyards looking for more females to mate with. Now, the skunks have an adaptation to where they can have another mating season later on in the year if that female's litter is killed. Maybe it gets, she's out and she's walking along with her four or five babies, and lo and behold comes a predator like a fox or a bobcat or a coyote or even those large metal predators known as cars. Many times, you know, if a female striped skunk has her litter actually killed off, she can then very likely go back into estrus later in that same year, and then a male will find her, and they will mate and have another litter. The typical gestation period is pretty short for skunks. It's not 9 or 10 months, you know, it's pretty short. Amazingly, those little babies are formed during a short gestation of a little bit more than 60 days. I think 60, 63, 65 days, somewhere in there, but they don't go past 65. These super cute little bundles of black and white fur are then born sometime in May or June each year. And I kind of misspoke there because they aren't born with fur at all. If a mating happens early enough, you might see some born in April as well. These little cute little furless and completely helpless blind baby skunks are usually born in litters of about 3 skunks, 4 skunks, maybe as high as 8 babies each year. And all those babies are cute, but have you ever seen the baby skunks walking behind their mothers? It's about the cutest little thing ever. Some of the just cutest little babies you could ever have. It usually takes them about a month or so to open up their eyes, and they get weaned off of the mama's rich milk in less than 2 months. So, you know, in a month, they're already got their eyes open. In 2 months, they're already weaned off of the milk. So pretty quick. And then the baby males, they start to leave their mothers later in the summer. Already, the baby males are leaving the mamas late in the summer, while those baby females, now they'll actually stay around with their mom until the next spring, usually. So about the time she's about to have another litter of babies, that's when I guess she kind of kicks the little baby females to the curb. In most years, these baby females will be packing up and leaving their moms by the time that next little litter of babies are born. It's pretty traditional. So let's talk about predators of skunks. What in the world? So what animals would even take a chance at going after a skunk as a prey animal? What in the world? But of course, skunks do have a very distinctive color with their black and white fur. Not a lot of animals look like that. And they're incredibly potent spray to defend themselves, right? So many animals will see this black and these white animals, and they'll make a wide berth around them, right? They've been around that before. They know what's going to happen, and they just don't want any part of that. Sometimes they recognize the skunks as a threat because they've had an experience of being sprayed in their lives. Now, most predators with an intense sense of smell will stay far away from a skunk. Some predators will eat a skunk as a last resort, you know, when times are getting tough and, you know, it's a dry season and there's maybe some animals that there's just not a lot to eat. And all of a sudden, there goes a skunk. Hey, I'm going to go get it. Their prey instinct. You know how your dog, I mean, it's just got that prey instinct. And it sees something moving and takes off after it. So that happens. Happens out there in the wild, of course, too. Believe it or not, there are several animals that brave the spray of the skunk to go after a skunk for an actual meal. And you can probably guess those. It's well known that red foxes, gray foxes sometimes, coyotes for sure, cougars, bobcats, and even, of course, our domestic dogs will go after skunks. I don't know if you've been around a lot of coyotes or been around a lot of people that have hunted coyotes, but a lot of times you can smell their fur and they've been sprayed by skunks before. Invariably, they always get sprayed, these predators, but if they were really, really hungry, they just keep up the pursuit and the attack until they finally get to eat the skunk. But many of the predators that attack skunks are coming in from the air. What about the big birds of prey, right? So birds of prey will attack and eat a skunk. And folks, the smell doesn't even bother them, right? These aerial predators would be like, red-tailed hawks or the great horned owl. That's one that definitely goes after skunks. And then a few of the other large predator birds of prey will go after skunks. So, you know, I don't know if you know, like, as far as taste and smell, for example, like in my bird feeders, I will put red pepper flakes in there. And you're thinking, well, why would you do that? Well, it doesn't bother the birds, but what does it bother? The mammals. So mammals like squirrels, they typically won't eat the bird seed because you put the red hot pepper flakes in there. So maybe you already knew that. I don't know. Maybe you already also knew that when a skunk sprays a threat in the face, not only is it one of the most pungent smells we know, it also burns. It burns the skin. It burns the mouth. It burns the nose and especially burns the eyes. And it can burn the eyes so much that they can't see temporarily. So it gives the skunk a chance to get away. That scent chemical is called N-butyl mercaptan. And it can also make the predator not able to see temporarily. So that obviously gives that skunk 5 or 6 minutes to get well down the road away from that predator. So most animals, including humans, will also physically get sick. Symptoms of this kind of sickness would be lots of heavy coughing so bad, tons of mucus coming up, a runny nose, your snot's falling out of your nose. It's awful, you know, coming out of your throat, coming out of your nose, and then your gag reflex kicks in and you're just vomiting like crazy. Animals do that as well. So getting sprayed by a skunk is not a fun time at the office, right? Not a fun time at all. Because of this, any predator that has been sprayed or seen another animal sprayed is usually very, very careful around a skunk. So that one time has now protected the skunk, at least with that predator, probably for a lifetime. You know, folks, I've been camping, like I said, in the mountains. And one time I was with my brother and we were in the Smoky Mountains again. I'm trying to remember which camp area we were at, but we were back in the mountains and we were camping and we got up in the morning and I guess I eat bacon all the time, you know, so we're out there and I'm cooking some bacon. And I got some grease and I went over to find a spot where I could pour the grease out and maybe set the rock on top of it or something like that. And no sooner did I get over to this area and here they come, like a skunk coming in kind of from the left and another one coming in from the right. So they weren't together, but boy, they hit the spot at the same time. And here they come, couple of skunks coming into our campfire area and they smell that food. And as the skunks were kind of jockeying for position to get to our food and getting to that spot where I poured out the grease, I didn't even have a chance to get the rock on there. They raised their tails up high in the air. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me. Are we about to have like a, you know, skunk spraying each other? But they weren't. They weren't aiming at us. Their behinds weren't pointing at us. They were actually aiming their butts at each other. Tails straight up in the air. And I wish you could see them kind of dancing back and forth, facing each other with their back ends, right? They were warning each other and trying to make sure they got our food by themselves. And whew, thank goodness we didn't have a full-scale skunk war right there at our campsite that day. It ended up a third skunk came in, and then later a a raccoon came in as well. But to be honest, I really can't imagine a skunk spraying another skunk. I haven't heard of that happening, and I would hope that they would be smart enough not to spray each other, knowing how potent that potent spray is. So, folks, you know, we talked about what animals will actually eat skunks. What do skunks themselves have an appetite for, huh? Any guesses? So, some of the skunks prefer foods involving, like, moles and voles, a lot of small mammals, right? Rats, mice, and birds that they can ambush and even eat their eggs. They get into some, you know, turkeys actually mate in the spring and lay their eggs and sometimes April or so, and May, and you know around that time, and they'll find those ground nests and just walk in there and just eat up the eggs. So again, they like moles and voles and rats and mice and birds, and they'll eat the eggs, and they'll eat dead carcasses of animals as well. So they're cleaning up some things as well. They'll also eat a lot of bugs and insects, including things like crickets and wasps. Grasshoppers and bees and beetles and the larva of a lot of beetles. That's our grubs down in the ground, right? Skunks also will gobble up farmers' corn and apples on the ground, plant leaves of all types, grasses. They walk along and graze. They'll eat a lot of grass. They'll if some blackberries are falling on the ground or there's some low-hanging fruit, they'll eat blackberries or maybe apricots, peaches, pears, different types of nuts, garden crops. You know, they might get in and grab a tomato or two, and they will scavenge on garbage. So be careful setting your garbage out. You know, we've set our garbage out on the front porch and then gone back in and come back. You'll forget about it, and something gets in and tears the bag all apart. Could be a cat, could be a raccoon, could be a skunk. Hey, they also, you know, like I said before in past episodes, we feed a lot of birds, and so they eat a lot of bird seed that has fell to the ground. We feed some outdoor cats. They're not our cats, but we take care of them and build little houses for them and keep them warm in the winter. So we set out pet food. We've gotten to where we won't put out the cat food at night, but we do in the morning put out the pet food, and the cats actually get to eat it. So watch out putting your pet food out. Maybe bring the bowl in at night. Don't leave it out all night long. So you might see some holes actually dug in your yard, and sometimes these holes might be, it could be like a gray squirrel digging a hole and burying a nut, but if it's not covered back up, a lot of times it's a skunk digging for grubs. So moles and skunks, they love digging in our yards to get these grubs, right? Well, you know what? I know we talked about predators, and I know we talked about what skunks eat. I don't think we've talked about where skunks live. So I mentioned geographically where they live, but what about specifically, where would you find a skunk living? What kind of habitat? What kind of place would a skunk live in? And so skunks, you know, they're not too finicky when it comes to locating a place to live, but they commonly live within 2 miles of a water source. You know, 2 miles of a water source like a pond or a creek, maybe a small river, but they can be found in brushy areas, forested areas, grasslands, open prairies, and even developed neighborhood areas like where I live. Now, we've got woods behind our house, but there's skunks that walk through the neighborhood and, you know, things like that. Spotted and striped skunks use similar types of habitat environments, but spotted skunks are more readily to be found in and around forested areas and woodlands and are not as lenient of actual human activity as the striped skunk is. So as we see striped skunks around neighborhoods, you're not going to see, usually, typically, it's kind of rare to see a spotted skunk. Skunks don't use, Skunks do use underground dens year-round for sleeping and relaxing, maybe hiding from house cats and things like that, having their babies and rearing their young. And these dens are usually located under wood and rock piles, under storage buildings. You got a storage building in your backyard? Be careful. Because I know our whole area, we've got skunks right across the golf course in our area. There's a pool, and I'll talk about that in a minute. We've seen skunks at the pool. They'll dig underneath your porch and concrete slabs, and as well as in rock crevices and tunnels and sewers. They get down in the sewers and those dry sewers and walk around. Drain pipes and fallen, hollowed out trees are a big area where they'll get into and make that a den. If you didn't know, it's like skunks have really long, sharp fingernails, and they're great for digging their own dens, digging in those hollow trees, and digging the dirt underneath and getting underneath your porch. But they often use burrows abandoned by other animals, like I was saying earlier, like groundhog holes. Like, I knew this was a groundhog hole. I had seen groundhogs come out of it, and that particular day as I stood there, I watched a skunk come up out of the groundhog hole, right? So easy pickings. Grab a nice little den there. For several years, you know, let's talk about that pool. We would rent out a public pool here in Lexington, real close to where I live and real close to where I went to high school. So if you know me, you might know where this pool is. But we would rent out this public pool for about, 3 hours from about 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock at night, right here in Lexington, right after they closed down. And they, the manager would stay back, and the lifeguards would stay back, and we would bring in, we would rent out the pool for our daughter's birthday parties and invite the cheerleaders and invite the dancers and their friends and family members. So we got a big group of people all having a fun party at the pool. And we found out that under the concrete area where we set up the cake and where we set up the food area every year was a known den area for skunks. And the first year we did this, we had some skunks come out and actually walk around the party. Maybe the cake smelled too good. The next years, we heard that they had captured and moved the skunks, but skunks kept coming back. And I can remember, we walked over to the fence the second year. We didn't see them in the fenced enclosure, but we saw some skunks walking by. So they lived right there in the area, you know. So even though they had been captured and moved, and the skunks do keep coming back sometimes. What else? I'll tell you, they must have really liked that pool area, and I told you they like to live close to a water source, so maybe that's it. Well, nature lovers, that's a wrap tonight on our little black and white friends that are on the move right now in February to locate a mate in the annual skunk mating season, February, March, maybe a little bit into April. Now you know. Watch carefully as you're driving home tonight. One may just cross the road right in front of you. Be careful, folks. If you liked the Amateur Naturalist podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe. Give us a rating. Give us a 5 rating. And leave the product a great review. Well, folks, thanks for listening to my podcast yet again tonight. And as always, I sincerely appreciate all of you downloading and listening to the Amateur Naturalist podcast. Hey, good night, everyone, and take care. Hey, everyone, Tommy Fowler here. Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? I know I did, and I wasn't for sure exactly how to make a podcast or how to market it, and that is where Buzzsprout came in. Maybe you want a new fun hobby, or you just want to have a new side hustle to make a little bit of money. So far, it's been a super fun hobby to me. Personally, I did a lot of research looking for a podcast host site, and Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and even track the success of your own podcast. Hey guys, I only started in mid-August 2022, and already I am listened to in over 100 countries around the world. I am currently listened to on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and 18 other popular podcast sites. Now that is what Buzzsprout can help you do as well. Hey, you can start your own podcast with just a smartphone, your earphones, and your stories. You don't need a bunch of fancy equipment to start off. Hey, folks, let me get you started. Go to my podcast show notes. You're going to see my podcast website link and maybe one or two advertiser links. Look for the Buzzsprout link. Now, click on that link to go to Buzzsprout, and you are going to get a $20 credit if you sign up today for a paid plan. Plus, it helps me out to keep my podcast on the air, and I might be able to finally update some equipment. By joining today through the link down in my show notes, you're going to get a great-looking podcast website, awesome audio players that you can drop in other websites, and fantastic analytics to see just how you are performing worldwide. Join today over 100,000 podcasters and myself already using Buzzsprout and get your awesome message out to the world. Hey, don't forget, it's totally free to start off with Buzzsprout in the beginning, and it does not cost much to join their first paid plan. And if you join today and you sign up for an inexpensive paid plan by clicking on the link inside of my show notes, you're going to get $20 off, and you'll help me out a little bit at the Amateur Naturalist Podcast. Thanks, folks.